G'day, I'm Warwick Thornton, the writer-director of Samson and Delilah, and you're listening to 3CR.
Renegade economists are saying, yeah.
Economics for activists. Economics is being made. Economics. These are the tools activists need. How can we calculate? What motivates them? Why do people spend money? Understand the basics.
From BP oil spills to Goldman Sachs to Greece falling apart, what do they all have in common? Something that the Henry Review brought up again and again this week. Some big news here on The Renegade Economist with Carl Fitzgerald. Carl Fitzgerald's my name, and today's special guest is going to be Brian Kavanagh, joining me in about 10 minutes. Yes, the esteemed Brian Kavanagh, to pull apart the Henry Tax Review, how it's going to create a blueprint for capitalism 3.0. Is that true? Will it happen? Ooh, who knows? But thank you for joining me here on The Renegades, where we focus in on the monopolies of landlords, bankers, and those licensed utilities who are lucky enough to have control over some portion of this planet. And wow, can you believe the news stories out and about at the moment? It is steaming along with BP's oil spills going to cost over $50 million at least. Quite tragic. And of course, behind that has been a wipe off of BP's London shares of around about $30 billion in value. And Halliburton were the company who provided the cement that blew out in the well. Surprise, surprise. Also, another company to look out for is called Cameron International, and they were the ones who supplied the well head equipment that was designed to supposedly prevent the blowouts. I wonder what sort of shortcuts those companies have been pulling in order to deliver their quarterly dividend bonuses to keep their share markets happy so the CEO bonuses can roll on. And of course, all of those profits are aiming to keep up with the 15,000% return that can be made in land speculation, and that's what Goldman Sachs did by buying up the land along the transmission lines in the Nevada desert, knowing that solar parks would be set up there soon. They were bought for next to nothing, those land sites, and now have gone through the roof, and boy oh boy, aren't Goldman in trouble. Yeah, they've been busted for a whole pile of administrative stuff-ups with their short sales just since December the 9th, 2008, and Jan 22, 2009. They accepted 385 orders to short stocks, but it had not first arranged to borrow the securities as collateral. And so the Goldman unit failed about 68 times over that period to timely close out market-making positions in stocks, or guess what, notify customers about such lapses. So, yes, they are in the firing line of the US regulators. And, of course, guess what's come out today? They're going to go for an out-of-court settlement. Goldman Sachs look like they're lining up to avoid the courts, to avoid more damaging PR, and slide on through the PR quagmire with a $10 or $20 million fine. That's probably what they're trying to go for, but it seems like the SEC really want to step it up a level, and it looks like it's going to move from a fraud-based crime with civil-based penalties to a more serious charge. Will that happen? We will see, because would you believe it? in March of this year. Goldman Sachs, as his darn computer goes off again. Goldman Sachs donated more money to US senators in March 2010 than they did in all of 2009. Surprise, surprise, in an age of lobbyocracy, you say. Well, the old Greeks, the mad Greeks, aren't they, up the creek without a paddle? They've been forced through good old IMF austerity measures that we've seen in countries like Latvia, where Michael Hudson's told us how the death rate has skyrocketed, the birth rate has plummeted, and young people are leaving the country in droves. Well, Greece has been accepted to take on this tough medicine as well. And one of those type measures, one of the most drastic, is to increase the retirement age from the holiday-like age of 53 up to 67. They've increased the retirement age by 14 years to reduce all their pension payments as these baby boomers come of age. Wow. So there's a 48-hour strike / riot over there at the moment. There must be lots of riot porn going on indie media sites around the world. Air flights have been cancelled. Schools and hospitals have gone on strike. Public transport as well. It is on for young and old, and it will be very interesting to see whether this $30 billion in cuts to social and health services will exist. The union movement in Greece has had quite some success in forcing the government's hand in past debates. Back in 2001, they held similar strikes, but never before has the Greece economy been in such a shambles. And why is it in such a shambles? Well, because they haven't got their fiscal regime in order, their taxation system. And property prices there have increased about 200% in the last decade. How much have wages increased? Next to nothing, no doubt. And the danger is that if this bailout in Greece fails, what's going to happen for Spain and Portugal? Because they're in the poo as well, majorly. And so, yeah, Joseph Stiglitz is saying these speculators are circling in on the currency, they're shorting it. And the Spanish Prime Minister Zapatero is dismissing such talk as complete madness. Well, that would probably be the only thing he could say to try and defend his position because, yeah, the bonds are tumbling in Spain despite such statements as that, and the euro is under threat, says Stiglitz. So we're going to watch that one very, very eagerly. Over in England, the election's zooming along, and we will see who comes through in their ancient first-past-the-post type system. What a farce that is. The countries like Canada and Britain have a first-past-the-post polling system. Yeah, well, very, very interesting what's going on in this global environment. And, of course, so much of it comes back to this speculative mindset, and that's what is supposedly the driver of economic growth in this day and age. It's all about speculation, and there's the Chinese government trying to put the brakes on their property bubble, this time by raising their statutory reserve deposits up to a whopping 17% for their banks, meaning the banks can't lend any money out to young people trying to buy a house. But this hasn't had much effect in the past, and the reason why they're not using interest rates is because they know the economy is blown out. It's shot. So there's lots of issues in China to come, and many people believe that so much of that stimulus money that was pumped through the Chinese economy, it was 14% of their GDP was their stimulus, a huge amount. I think Australia's was only 3 or 4%. But that resulted in a 12% growth, economic growth rate in China in the first 3 months of this year. But the result? Lots of centrally planned, totally useless tourist towns and oversupply of assets that the country really doesn't need. So, yeah, who said we're out of this GFC? It's just warming up, ladies and gents. In years to come, we will look back and see that this is more than the Great Recession.
Yep, rock. Harise, kibiseni ekibiba lahamis yo mac vaute, yaprak. Harise, lahamis we, lahamis vaute, lahamis runimo, yaprak. Harise, kibiseni ekibiba lahamis yo vaute, yaprak. Harise, vautimo. Kibiseni, kibise vaute, kibise vaute. Chicka 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 Allahu magfunimo Masare ba urune yafrak Harise kibiseni ekibiba Allahu misho magfate yafrak Harise Allahu misho vuti, Allahu misho rini, Allahu misho vuti, Allahu misho vunimo.
Welcome back to The Renegade Economist with Carl Fitzgerald, and very happy to have in the studio the esteemed land valuer, Brian Kavanagh. Brian, welcome back to The Renegade Economists.
Thanks, Carl, and it's good to be on your show again.
So the Henry Review hit the headlines all week. Many people would have thought, tax reform, what the hell does that have to do with me?
Well, it's got a lot to do with everyone, and what a great review it was, Carl. It came out saying virtually everything we wanted it to say. That is, we need to capture the people's rents to the people, both for resources and land rents. But unfortunately, the Rudd government hasn't gone along with the land rent bit, our blocks of land and so forth. But I think people have got to be educated to that, and the politicians seem to know it too, so they're not going to bring that up in an election year.
And I kind of felt reading some of the 1,000 pages, haven't made my way through it all together so far, but it was a bit of an educative tool to try and bring up the general education and understanding of the role of taxation in society.
Yeah, I think Ken Henry and his panel have done a fantastic job insofar as I did things that they've recommended things that probably aren't necessarily what the public would go for. They didn't get trendy or for the latest gizmo. They looked at the basis for revenue systems, and I think that's what we've got to do. And so while they've really set the parameters for the next 10, 15 years, and they've left us well and truly in there, Carl.
Well, some of the little tidbits that excited me, just as some teasers, just building up our education, the proportion of Australians aged 55 to 64 with mortgages has increased from 13% in 96-97 to 30% in 2007-08. They also said that as of 5th of June 09, there were 418,000 individuals and families paying more than 30% of their income in rent, even after receiving rent assistance. And 129,000 of these people were paying more than 50% of their income on just somewhere to live. So, yeah.
So whether you're a renter or a purchaser, Carl, things are not looking good, Carl. And where do we go? I mean, I'd argue, of course, that we're having the GFC because we've taxed people out of doing productive things and got them speculating. That's the sort of signals that tax systems given people around the world. So it's about time we looked at what's best for people, you know. And I think for a starter, the resource rent tax is a beauty. I don't know whether you want me to touch on that.
But go for it.
That's excellent because with a background as a property valuer, I know that when a person has run a business and decides, well, I'm past it, I'm too old or whatever, they'll let out the thing as a going concern. They've set up the business, they own the freehold and so forth, so they want to know what rent to strike. Well, what they do is they usually go to the net profit after all outgoings and split that 50-50 as between the new person that's going to run the business and themselves as owner. And that's virtually what Rudd has accepted from the Henry Review. In fact, they're taking 40%. They could take up to 50, really. And But of course, the mining industry, quite predictably, has come out dead against this. They think they can see their profits going down, but certainly not their costs going up. Sure, their profits are going down, but that's because that's been at our expense. We look like getting our fair share now, and they don't want that. So I heard today one miner say they might go offshore. Well, good riddance, go offshore. I don't think we need that sort of investor, Carl.
Yeah, well, it was very good to see Crikey laying the boot into Clive Palmer, who's accused Wayne Swan of being, he should be part of the Communist Party. And, yeah, you know, Clive Palmer said he was going to wind back all his investment. His mate at, is that Lambest? It was something like the Lambest Project. Mm. He also said he was going to leave the country. Well, listeners, Crikey's pulled that apart and said there really was no project listed for Lambest, and gone further to analyse that this project that was supposedly on the ASX weren't informed about this change of plans of leaving the country, so they may have broken ASX rulings there. So very interesting to see this media battle going on. Sure, Australia will be one of the highest tax resource sectors in the world, but this comes back to the essential question that we keep pushing on this show, and that is, what is the Commonwealth if the people don't get a share of it? Mm. And here we are, we're only willing to take 40% of the profits, and Clive Palmer's jumping up and down, and Mitch Hook from the Minerals Industry Association is giving steely glares wherever he can, but these guys have been on a good wicket.
Mm. Yeah, well, as to the veracity of Clive Palmer's statements, I think your listeners could just consider whether Wayne Swan can be considered a communist under any... I think the Labor government's been falling short of a lot of people on the Labor side's aspirations, Carl. So I think to call Wayne Swan a communist is ludicrous. It sort of shows where he's coming from, the Genghis Khanian right, not really.
And so the advantage of going with a super profits resource tax is that it does allow companies to invest in a somewhat more risky project and not pay as much tax on it until it actually comes through to fruition.
Up and running, that's right.
Which suits a lot of these projects because there's a huge capital outlay.
There's a lot of upfront expenditures, and that's the thing that the moment the first thing starts running doesn't mean that you're into profit by any stretch of the imagination, Carl. So there is a case, actually, not to pay on the royalties the moment they run, but let's have a look at the net profits of the companies as they come. That's still Australians' rent, and that's our interest in the place. And so Mr Rudder said, yeah, it's 40%, and I think that that might be a bit hard initially for our miners to take, but if they don't take it, others will move in and do so. And I think it leaves plenty of profit for them. It just gives Australians their fair share at last. Now, if only we'd move into this other area, the, land tax. We were going. Henry said, why not get rid of this mad array of state land taxes with all their thresholds, exemptions, aggregation provisions? It is far too Robin Hoodish. I never thought I'd say that sort of thing, but it is really, because you end up with about 1% of land taxpayers paying two-thirds of the land tax, and the wealthy own most land and more of it anyway, so a flat rate in the dollar is going to get most of them. And so Henry's saying, let's get rid of all state land taxes, let's get rid of payroll tax, which was good to hear him say, let's get rid of stamp duties, and wind up the land tax. Now, if they'd only do that, that'd be the second leg of things, where, and for those people at home who are worried about, oh yeah, but I don't want to pay on my property, there's something like Australia's rent on land values is something like about $325 billion or something, and the greater part of that is captured by less than 1% of people. So really, folks, you haven't got much to worry about. If you just pay your fair share, there'll be others paying significantly higher, and that is unless you've got about 20 or 30 properties to your portfolio or something like that.
Can you just repeat that? 1% of the population gains how much per annum?
Well, it's the greater part of our rent. We capture 40 billion of our land rents, and that's even if you include land taxes, rates, and stamp duty. we collect 40 billion and it's over 300 billion. So, and of that, the greater part of that 300 billion is captured by a tiny minority, Carl. And you just look at the names that appear. This isn't a politics of envy, but if you have a look at BRW's Rich 200 every year, 99% of them have had interests in property. They know that's what the tax system favours. That's why they're there, you know.
That is just staggering. So about 260 billion odd is going to the top 1%. And this year, their minimum award wage earners are really firing up to get a $27 per week pay rise,
yep.
You know.
We literally are wage slaves, and people don't realise that to the extent that you capture your rents, you can't then keep wages down. They do rise automatically because we're having wage earners' salaries taxed, but it's also the trickle-down effect of all these taxes act as dead weight. And the place would come alive if you just took your natural revenue, that's the publicly generated land rents, and left what people earn for themselves alone. It would be a new world.
And so just to spell this out a bit more, in December 2006, minimum wage earners had a 7.7% increase. And in October 2008, nearly 2 years later, they battled to get a 4.1% increase. Mm. And in just the last year, we've had announced this week that property prices have gone up 20%.
Mm. So we're working on, if people only sat down and thought about it, I've taken the study further, and real incomes, particularly in the US, I've got them going back to 72. It's much the same story in Australia. Real income since 1972 non-executive type people have actually declined since 1972. Sure, we've had some real increases in recent years, but over the long run, it's declined. So you factor on top of that, you're increasing property prices, you know, you've got declining rent wages, as we've said, you've got increasing property prices, so, and increasing taxation, that's gone up. Yeah, we've got a social contract, but where should the revenue come from? We're taking it from our own incomes. Let's put it where it rightfully belongs, on our rents. But with all this happening, we've got less and less net take-home incomes. So think it through, what happens? We've got to go into greater and greater debt, and that's it. You have a look at the household debt in Australia, and it's unpayable. It can't be paid back, so there's got to be something happen. You know very well my attitude, where we are going to have a bust here with our property market, and it's incontrovertible if you look at the figures. Sure, we've gone this far without one, excuse me, because of China and so forth, but the debt's just unpayable.
And this week, interest rates have also gone up. And with our negative gearing set up, property owners can write off that increase in interest costs. And I've done some figures on that. And that equates to about a $30 million tax subsidy from working class people who have to pay their taxes, who can't afford to hire an accountant who can hide their money in a tax haven. And so, again, the property class have this huge advantage. And the Henry Tax Report stated in it that housing supply is the biggest issue, but taxation wasn't as big an influence on it as a government planning and zoning. And this, ladies and gents, you can imagine the property lobby jumping up and down on this and saying, listen, we've got to sort out this zoning. And so with the upcoming COAG housing conference, this seems to be the big focus everyone's jumping on. But Brian, what about the hidden supply of speculative vacancies? You're a land valuer, you're out there on the street seeing what's going on. Tell us the story.
Well, I'd need to do no further than to look at your report, Carl. That opened my eyes. The speculative vacancy in Carlton South, what was the percentage level there?
29.06%. And guess what? The student rents at Melbourne Uni have gone up another 6% just this semester.
Yeah, well, so I'm a landlord in Carlton South. I've had a bit of a bad experience, tenants wrecking my place. But I've got the market working for me. Why am I going to bother putting a tenant in when the capital gains are there for me? So that's dead right. There's this vacancy that doesn't find its way into the real estate industry's figures, because they're only reporting on the properties they've got for sale, but they've got for rent. But there are all these other ones just being held vacant off the market. Gee, what a stimulus, a significant land tax would be to kick those into gear and bring down prices to so that people could actually afford to buy a place.
And to explain this difference between rents and prices, I've done some figures you can read about in the latest Progress magazine. If you become a trial subscriber, we can send you this huge opus by Michael Hudson called The Counter Enlightenment. But in page 3 there, I'm comparing what you could earn renting out a property. Could grab the income of $17,280, or you could keep it vacant and sell it at the end of the, well, at the start of the 13th month, so you avoid capital gains tax, and take home $120,000.
On the that says it all, and but on the score of Glenn Stevens increasing the the interest rates again. I was going to really step into them on my blog today. Am I allowed to mention that?
Yes, go for it.
It's called thedepression.org.au, and I ended up a little bit sympathetically because I don't think he is a crook. I think he has got to sort of try and rectify some of the things that the Rudd government's done by way of all these things that keep the property market up and up ludicrously into a bubble. First home buyers grant and so forth really only helps the sells, it doesn't help the purchaser. But he's forced to do this to remediate the actions. He's between a rock and a hard place. Ken Henry's trying to do the right thing. Secretary for the Treasury, he's made these recommendations that we capture public land values to annual public land values to the public purse. Meanwhile... you've got Glenn Stevens trying to keep the economy happening while the government's making all these outlandish overtures to what's really the property industry to keep property values up. They've got to be allowed to find their true level, which is obviously down. How far down, we don't know. But we don't need any more subsidy of the property industry. Interestingly, I see, although they didn't have a submission into the Henry Review, the Property Council of Australia has come out in favour, Carl, of a tax too. So we're an incredible partnership there. You know, Prosper Australia and Land Values Research Group and so on, and the Property Council of Australia. Even they must be able to see that it's no good sending us into a complete collapse. That's one way out to capture the rents and to untax people and get them doing things.
And you can see the writing starting to appear on the wall. So many retailers this week have announced big profit write-downs, from Harvey Norman to Clive Peters to Fantastic Furniture. Yep. It really is starting to show up. So whatever you do, ladies and gents, do not buy at the moment. Do not let any of your friends buy a house at present, please. It will drop at least 10, probably 30%. We're the most overvalued property market out of all of the bubbles that have collapsed.
I've had to work with my kids on that one. I've been successful in one case, unsuccessful in a couple of others. But things will work out for the best. But at the moment, there is no doubt that property is horribly overpriced in Australia, as it is in China, about the only two bubbles that haven't popped. And I think they're both just about ready.
They certainly are. Well, if you want to get your head around what we keep talking about here at the Renegade Economist, make sure you check out earthsharing.org.au and prosper.org.au. We've got a whole pile of articles up there analysing the Henry Tax Review with links to relevant chapters that you can look at.
Some good stuff up there.
There's some great stuff. They've really done a good job explaining the intricacies using coded economic language of what this speculative capitalism has become. And we're thinking, sure, Kevin Rudd, he hasn't come out in favour of reforming negative gearing, which is rather outrageous, reforming the capital gains discount of 50%, which is again another huge letdown, and implementing this federal land tax to remove the stamp duties and payroll taxes and the like at the state level. But it is an election year, but won't it be? That could be it, couldn't it?
I've suddenly realised, yeah.
But, thanks very much for listening. My name's Carl Fitzgerald, and today's special guest has been Brian Kavanagh. Check out his work at thedepression.org.au. And always great to have you on the show, Brian. Thank you very much.
Good show. Thanks, Carl.
Australians love art scandals. We have a deep wish to...